I'm very pleased to be able to bring Charlie McConis out to Ground Zero again. Charlie's been involved here much longer than I have, and he can tell you sort of his own history here. But he's also taken a personal interest in the Navy in the Pacific, and Bangor being certainly one of the major, if not the major, Navy installation in this area. And I've asked Charlie to come and give us an update on what's going on in the world at this stage in relation to nuclear weapons development, nuclear weapons negotiations. Charlie?
Well, good morning. It's an honor and a privilege to be here again at Ground Zero and in the presence of so many wonderful, dedicated people giving up a summer Saturday to come here in prayer and meditation and work and hope towards a world without nuclear weapons, a world where our children can grow to work on other issues, hopefully. The issue of the planet itself, as we all know, now looms before us. I first came here 32 years ago when my wife and I arrived in the Seattle area, her family here, and she entered medical school here. I had come from a background of activism against the Vietnam War as a very young Catholic priest, and was quickly involved in the effort to resist Trident and to stop nuclear war from happening at that critical point in what came to be known as the Cold War. A lot of water under the bridge since then. Intense campaigns in the early 80s, and I am recently reminded that nothing is lost. We have learned that in 1983, a young college student at Columbia University was very moved, although his own background didn't involve that kind of activity. He was more involved in kind of community issues. He was very, very impressed by the anti-nuclear movement of that period of time, and how in many ways mirrored the civil rights movement. And he wrote a fine piece in his student publication at Columbia University. And that young man was named Barack Obama. So these things have been on his mind for a long time, and perhaps some of us in this room, in some minuscule and spiritual way, were part of that formation. The big thing that has changed since we gathered here a year ago on Hiroshima Nagasaki Day is that, of course, the government of the United States is significantly different in terms of a new president and also a changed Congress. Russia also has a new president. I want to very briefly, because we're already a little bit behind on today's schedule, update you on what's going on only 6 months into the Obama administration in efforts to get rid of nuclear weapons, at least move in that direction. I have some handouts. I'm happy to say there are not enough of them. We have more people here than we thought we would. So if you'll share, and I understand there's a possibility that at a later point in time, someone might, you know, run over somewhere and have more copies made. Ground Zero began, and for many of us, efforts to disarm the world began during the Cold War, and it's so easy for those of us my age to still have that perspective that this is an issue between the United States and Russia, and that's the entire focus. And there is still good reason to think of it that way. As I'm sure you're aware, over 90% of the world's 26,000 nuclear weapons are still in the possession of the United States and Russia. But the Cold War is over, and the likelihood of the United States and Russia deliberately attacking each other is mercifully reduced. Although last summer we saw how quickly that can change when the fight began between Russia and Georgia, and we became involved in that. But we all understand now that we must rid the entire planet of nuclear weapons, and that frames the issue in a much broader way than just us and the Russians. I do believe that this administration, the Obama administration, understands that, They understand that it's a global issue, that it involves more than just the two countries. And so I've tried to give you a quick update here on the variety of efforts at arms control and disarmament with regard to nuclear weapons. So the overview handout is says on the top of it, Nuclear Weapons Policy Update, 8 August 09. We do have to deal with the U.S. and Russia. As you know, very early on, the Obama administration and the new Russian government under President Medvedev have begun negotiations again. The START treaty, negotiated way back during the first Bush, is due to expire in December, and with it, all the verification procedures that were put into place. The most recent Bush administration didn't care about any of that sort of stuff and was quite willing to let it lapse. And the Obama administration has understood that that's a disaster because that's at least sets the framework for everybody agreeing on who's got what. And the Obama administration has moved very fast to get those negotiations going. Remember, we're only 6 months in, and let's face it, on almost any issue, it's too early to say what is going to happen. There have already been three meetings of U.S. and Russian negotiators. And in July, we got a preliminary look at what might be the results of that. I think for any of us who are involved in this kind of issue, there are two things to say. First of all, any of this happening is so much better than the last eight terrible years. But from our perspective, of course, it's nowhere near enough. There has been, I think, a lot of disappointment with these preliminary figures. I think it's also important to realize that now we're in the real world of real negotiations. The Russians have some objections to this. American conservatives and military have objections to that. The preliminary agreement, and it will change as it becomes more formalized, is to bring deployed warheads of either side down to 1,500 to 1,675. Many organizations, including positions of social responsibility, had hoped to see that figure down to at about 1,000 in this first round. So I would say this is a disappointing figure, but as I say, reality hit in. It turns out that the Russians don't want to go below 1,500 right about now because they're worried about our missile defense being able to shoot that many down. The delivery vehicles, the missiles, number will be reduced to somewhere between 500 and 800 under this agreement, assuming that it goes forward. Again, we want to see zero there because right now the United States, for example, has 1,500 warheads sitting on top of missiles on hair trigger alert, many of them on the Trident D5 missiles based right here out of Bangor, a stone's throw from us. The next round of these negotiations will take place at the end of this month, going into early September. It is unclear at this point if the Obama administration is going to attempt to have a formal treaty that would have to get through the Senate this fall and be ratified. Remember, a treaty has to be ratified by two-thirds of the Senate. We have 60 Democrats in the Senate. That means they need 67 votes. So seven Republicans have to come on board. And as you well know, the Obama administration is engaged in many, many other struggles, and I think they're spending their political capital this time around on health care. So I there may, in other words, be an informal agreement between the United States and Russia in December to continue all of the rules and procedures from the START negotiations until a later time. Of equal and I think even greater importance is that for the first time since 2002, as mandated, required by Congress, the United States is undergoing a nuclear posture review process. This is a complete review of our nuclear weapons strategy, our nuclear weapons operations, our nuclear weapons forces. It is in process now. Needless to say, the guts of that are highly, highly classified. There have been some bits of information that have come out about it. On July 23rd, one Pentagon official said that the new nuclear posture review should result in progress toward Obama's long-term vision for disarmament. The vision is clear, and I think promise will be made, this person said. A week later, at an important strategic symposium, another Pentagon official said there are two imperatives for this review going on: to explore the possibility of creating conditions that might ultimately allow the nuclear weapon states to feel safer in relinquishing their nuclear weapons. That did not happen in the nuclear posture review under Clinton or Bush. The notion that they should try to set the conditions to encourage countries to get a nuclear weapons was never even raised in the two earlier nuclear posture reviews. I see that as encouraging, but of course, then the Pentagon guys quickly say, and the other objective is not to disarm unilaterally and to maintain an effective deterrent. So you've got a very, you know, on the one hand, on the other hand thing going there. I really like the campaign that has been launched by Women's Action for New Directions. Just go to their website, WAND, and they're really asking everybody to write in to President Obama, because it is a bureaucracy, he does answer to it, and say, President Obama, make sure this nuclear posture review reflects your professed commitment to disarmament. This is terribly important. Let me give you a really quick idea of why. You tell your military you got to defend the country. There are 10 bad guys and you get 10 bullets. You can't go and tell your military, we're going to take away 5 of your bullets and you keep doing a fine job. You have to tell the military, you know what, there aren't that many enemies anymore either, so don't worry about it. We're going to take away your bullets, but it's not a problem. You see what I'm saying? You can't just tell the military, we're going to get rid of your nuclear weapons, after you've told them they've got to defend the country. So this is a critical document that's going on here. Obama has input on the bureaucracy. We've got to let him know that we really care about this. And I've given you, I've provided you with the official Pentagon handout on what the nuclear posture review really consists of. Okay? The Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, which, as you recall, was shot down by the Republican-dominated Congress late in the Clinton administration, is another critical factor in trying to get rid of nuclear. If people can't test their nuclear weapons, it's one barrier to having them. And the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty needs to be ratified by the United States. There are a number of countries that have not signed it yet. The U.S., China, Egypt, India, Indonesia, Iran, Israel, North Korea, and Pakistan haven't done so. So that's it's an uphill battle. But, for example, Indonesia has said, well, if the U.S. okays it, then we will too. We have a terribly important leadership role on this. There are some hopeful signs. Senator McCain has said he will now support the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty if we try and go into it. It's a question of timing. You know, is that yet another thing to put on the Obama agenda? It's unclear how fast they will want to push this, but within the coming year, you will hear again about the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. Terribly important thing. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is the one that really, of course, deals with the issue of nuclear weapons all over the world, and is at its heart an agreement, a trade-off. New countries do not get nuclear weapons, new ones. The countries that have them get rid of theirs. Well, needless to say, the countries that have them have not kept up their part of the bargain, and there is increasing resistance among other countries who are now saying, well, if you're not going to get rid of yours, then we want them. We want them too. And as you all know, nuclear weapons have in recent times spread to Israel, they spread to India, they spread to Pakistan, they spread to North Korea. and we are at a very dangerous point. The knowledge is there. In many cases, the materials are there. If the non-proliferation treaty falls apart, what's to prevent right away, for instance, Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan from getting nuclear weapons? Those states could do so within a matter of months. We also know that there's the issue with Iran, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We are no longer in a position to say, don't do as I do as I say to other countries on nuclear weapons. So, next May is the next 5-year review conference of the Non-Proliferation Treaty that will be held at the UN in New York. And it's a critical moment. Will the treaty be strengthened? Will we be able to encourage other countries to take part of it? Will they get better inspection, more thorough inspections? Can we deal with the Middle Eastern situation, which means dealing with Israel and its, you know, sort of hidden arsenal of nuclear weapons? Boy, that's going to be a huge conference next May. The ones during the Bush administration were disasters. The United States showed no leadership. The rest of the world was appalled. We have a chance. As you know, if you've been seeing the polls, there is great international hope again that the United States will take a bold and moral leadership position on the issue of getting rid of nuclear weapons. So final thing that I haven't put on this sheet because I ran out of time, and that is stopping any more production of bomb materials, a fissile materials cutoff treaty. You can know how to make a bomb, but if you don't have the enriched uranium or the plutonium to put in it, you can't make one. But as long as those materials are being created, that remains a terrible issue. So the question is, can we stop that from happening? So we're at a critical time here, and you know, in whatever way that you feel drawn to and can believe in, this is a time to be active. There is some hope, at least, that a new American president and a different Congress can actually move forward. The Russians appear really, they've got their other problems now. The Russians appear ready to move on these matters. I stand here and I think on the fact that we are here to a certain extent, and because of the Trident base, obviously, and the Trident base is here because when the critical political decisions were being made about it, people like me were so fixated on the Vietnam War that we didn't pay attention. We didn't pay attention. And there are so many issues that it's really easy to get distracted. And nobody in this room is taking the nuclear weapons issue lightly just by the fact you're here. But many, many people are for very understandable reasons. So each one of us here has to be an incredible ambassador on this issue. Yes, climate change is even more overarching, but it's a bit more long term. Yes, healthcare is affecting a lot of us. We're sitting right here in this room and our concerns about it. But this issue is critical. It's at a tipping point, and we must do everything we can to prod and assist our government and our people to once again move forward on the agenda of global zero nuclear weapons. Thank you.
Yeah, let's take questions now at this particular stage, since everybody is still attentive, to give Charlie a chance to answer questions, folks a chance to ask questions, and see where we go from there.
It seems to me the last 8 years in the invasion of Iraq and so forth in Afghanistan, Russia and the rest of the world
have clearly seen that the United States cannot be trusted. That we are the major aggressor nation in the world. And what is going to motivate them to ever trust us again? There's another election coming up in 4 years. Why should the rest of the world ever trust us? and dismantle any of their defenses. We've been trying to install installations in Georgia and the Ukraine, threatening Russia. There's this whole very justified distrust, and how can we overcome that?
Well, there's no question that the damage created, particularly over the last 8 years, is truly enormous. And one thing is for sure, words won't do it. It will have to be deeds that are signaled to the world that the United States is going to behave differently now. That we have had wonderful words from Obama, and those words have had an amazing effect thus far. I don't know if you've seen like the polls of how is the United States regarded by other countries now. It's night and day. You know, the world, I must say, the world does not hate us. The world really wants us to be the good country that we could possibly be. That's why there's been such a response to Obama. The proof is in the pudding. You know, it really is. So all I can say is we will see if the Obama administration produces on any one of these areas. Will it really get out of Iraq, for example? Will it really insist that the Israelis stop building settlements, for example? It's going to have to be deeds. It's going to have to be deeds, yeah.
And part of this, too, is there's a fair amount of already criticism of the Obama administration for being a disappointment coming from the left. And a part of this is understanding the enormous inertia of these issues. A part of why we decided to build this house, which is built of very sturdy materials that are sturdy enough that, in fact, one of the Kitsap County inspectors coming by just inadvertently said, you know, take a nuclear bomb to blow this thing out. And Tom Rogers, who was with him, just sort of pointed at the fence, and the guy said, realized what he said. But we need to be patient. We need to be patient, and we need to be articulate in supporting the folks that want to change things. Yeah. See, Todd?
Which is more effective right now, in your opinion? I know this is a matter of judgment. Activities that are aimed at building awareness among the public, through schools and so on, or activities, as just several people described, aimed upward at asserting some pressure on politicians. Which is more useful right now at this point in time?
Well, in the short term, direct pressure on politicians is needed within the coming calendar year. Because between now and next May, critical things are going to be happening. That May NPT meeting is going to happen. The START treaty is going to run out in December. A decision about ballistic missile defense will have to be made, and a nuclear posture review is going to be done. So in the short term, now is the time to put as much pressure as possible, because we finally, in theory, have some politicians who actually may pay attention. The thing we cannot do is to take them for granted. We can't say, "Oh, Obama's in now. That's okay. Oh, we got Democrats in Congress. Not a problem." They need to be pressured from us. If then they fail, then other approaches need to be taken. I've been over that fence twice, and in front of a submarine and in front of a train. We all know what other steps can non-violently be taken, but now is the time to put pressure on the government.
I'm really concerned about Obama bombing Pakistan drones and killing civilians, given the fact that Pakistan also has nuclear weapons, and I wonder how these activities are impacting the Pakistani government's attitude towards the United States and their own use of nuclear weapons.
Well, of course, the situation with the war in Afghanistan is, to me, absolutely, in terms of foreign policy, the most troubling thing going on with regard to the Obama administration. To put it in a word, will this become the Obama administration's Vietnam, or the Bush and the Obama administration's Iraq? So it's a very worrisome thing. And the thing that's really troubling is that Pakistan itself is not a very stable state, but it's a state with at least 100 nuclear weapons. So It's a very convoluted relationship. The United States wants Pakistan to help it in the war against the Taliban, but to be honest with you, Pakistan is much more worried about its relationship with India. That's why it got nuclear weapons. And I think that the most likely nuclear war at this point in time would be between India and Pakistan. And recent studies by Physicians for Social Responsibility and its international organization have shown that even kind of a small nuclear war between India and Pakistan would create enough of a nuclear winter to cause crop failure in the northern half of the planet and kill probably a billion people. This is why this issue really is not just the United States and Russia anymore. If India and Pakistan have their own little nuclear war over there, bam. The world goes back, maybe not to the Stone Age, maybe just only to the Dark Ages. Is our policy of pushing Pakistan to be engaged in the war against the Taliban and using drones, is that directly affecting the Pakistan and its nuclear weapons? I don't know. I don't know if by doing that we are helping to destabilize the Pakistani government or not. Obviously, we don't think we are, and we have provided, the United States has provided Pakistan with a lot of equipment and training about how to retain control of nuclear weapons. The United States also maintains almost around the clock a Marine Expeditionary Unit afloat in the Indian Ocean that has special training on how to go in and attack and take out nuclear facilities.
Over here. Mary and then Joy.
Yeah. I understand, unless this information is maybe 2-3 months old, but that the U.S. gave advice, which was taken by Pakistan, to separate their nuclear warheads from their delivery systems to make their overall situation less volatile, less prone to somebody kind of, you know, taking it over and doing unauthorized things with it. That's called de-alerting. And I worked real hard on that issue in this country. I mean, it makes no sense to me to have any nuke subs at all. But the idea that they're actually doing practice runs out in the ocean with live ammunition makes no sense at all. And I just wonder what your thought is about how de-alerting, which frankly Obama and Clinton both supported, you know, have said that they're in favor of. You know, when our military could somehow get the Pakistanis to engage in de-alerting as a way to make their situation more stable, why we can't have de-alerting here as a way to make the likelihood of accidental use of nuclear weapons less likely. And I just wonder what your take is on that.
Well, I think it's safe to say that under this nuclear posture review that is under formation now, elements of de-alerting are absolutely being considered. I know some of the people that are involved. I have been in conferences with Rose Gerdemuller, the chief negotiator now of our START negotiations. I've been in conferences with Brad Roberts, who is one of the key guys in the Nuclear Posture Review. These are people who know Bruce Blair's work. So there's no question in my mind that de-alerting is now under consideration in the current nuclear posture review that is being done right now. You know, will it happen? That's a whole other matter. And the only input that we as the general public have into this is directly through the White House saying, you know, if you want to, when you write your letter to Obama and say, hey, this nuclear posture thing is going on here, come on, this is the chance to really, we know if we're going to really change, we have to change the guts of the military's nuclear infrastructure now. Do de-alerting now, so put that in your letter, you know, and say that, so that the guys in that team who are in favor of that are saying, man, we're getting a lot of public input about de-alerting. It's happy. This is it, between now and December, when the NPR, what little of it will be made public, gets made public, this is the time, these next 6 months. Thank you.